Hello, friends. It's Sex Nerd Sandra here. And I wanted to talk to you about something that I do when I'm not thinking about sex. And that is playing D&D. Now, later this month, I was asked to do something that I can't wait to do, and you can be a part of it. It's an event you can enjoy in the comfort of your own home, but it's at Meltdown Comics, and it's their annual celebrity charity D&D game. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty rad to me. And when I got the email to be a part of this, I kind of freaked out a little. I'm kind of hoping I'm a rogue, because that's kind of like where my heart's at right now. You know, stabby, stabby, sneaky, sneaky. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, I got a little aggression. I got to work out. We'll see. But please, the info is going to be up on meltcomics.com's website. And I'll probably post it on my blog as well as the info comes up. January 28th, please save the date from 1 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, California time. We'll be playing, and you can totally watch. It's going to be through stickum.com. That's where we're going to stream it live. And I just really hope that you can watch and enjoy the adventure. You can even buy the adventure for $5. Yeah, that's right. So D&D 4.0, lots of fun. Yeah, because, you know, even when you're a sex nerd, sometimes you just want to go kill a dragon or something, you know? Oh, also coming up on February 6th in the Los Angeles area, I'll be a part of a sexy night of comedy. I'll be running a sexy raffle. It's to fundraise for my friend Elaine, who was on the Taboo podcast, but we're putting together this crazy, great event. We kind of want to call it Ha-Ha's for Tatas, but that was already taken, so we're just trying to think of a really fun name. But that's February 6th, so you can check out my website for future details, probably next week sometime. All right. Well, enjoy this fun podcast Dave and I did with Kevin Eastman, and I will catch you next week. All right.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Dave, I'm very excited about today's show.
Sandra, me too.
Oh, God.
That was the whole episode.
I want to start off with the tip of the day. I'm just going to go there right now.
Show.
Because I'm very excited about what we're going to talk about.
Word.
I ran out of toilet paper today.
So the tip is, have toilet paper.
It is the tip. If you're interested in females, if that's who you swing toward, and you're going to have somebody of that persuasion at your house, please have toilet paper. Because you know what's... And even if you are low... Like, let's say you have toilet paper and it's in the cupboard, but and you're low on the roll, and you know a female's coming over and that's exactly who you want to bone, please just put a fresh roll of toilet paper out there. Because it's really... There's a guilt thing when you're using TP at someone else's house where you feel like, you know, girls, they use a lot of toilet paper. And it feels good to have a fresh roll there. It's just a way to just nest and let someone know that you're like, you're ready for love. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
There is stress when you see no toilet paper or very little. The stress there. You don't want
to
create stress.
It's not surprising to me. Every time I'm over at a girl's house, I definitely need toilet paper. You know what I mean? I just like to test the, you know what I'm saying? I take a shit at every girl's house that I go to. Every single one, whether it's platonic or romantic or whatever. My mom, my daughter. I have several daughters.
You must drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I understand.
When you have daughters, you have to drink coffee and take shits at their house.
But do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I didn't mean to make fun of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, it's a little bit of a mood killer. Just a little bit. And I realized at my own house, I'm like, I am female bodied. Why do I not have any? Why am I cock blocking myself?
I think it's a really good advice. I mean, I think there are a lot of things like that.
Uh-huh.
That
little things
that guys or whoever is having a girl over to their house doesn't necessarily think about. Like, make your bed. Maybe just make your bed.
Seriously, don't worry about the sheets. Just throw that comforter out there and make it look even.
If it's cold in the house, turn the heat on.
Yeah.
Because you're having a person over. You can freeze to death on your own if you want. Make them feel comfortable.
Well, if you'd like there to be nudity involved, you want your home to be a good incubator for that sort of activity.
For babies. You want the baby to be able to be made. It has to be warm for her to get pregnant.
Dave.
Sandra.
It's time for you to turn us on before we get into this conversation.
I don't have to try hard at all to do that.
No, this is it's like we're taking you into the erogenous zone. And this is a little, this is from, give me the book for a minute. I always mess up the title. This is from the book Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. And there's, for the female virgins out there or friends of female virgins, this is a little square she has about how to prepare yourself for your first sexual experience if you're the owner of a hymen. Go for
it's
it,
It's only
Dave.
Two words. Brace yourself. That's it. Wait.
Oh. I wish I had known
wait
this
before. Wait for marriage.
Before
That's all it says.
Before my first experience, I wish I had known this, actually. It would have been helpful. But this is our speaker sex series where Dave
speaker sex
talks soft and deep for all of us. So get ready with your speakers, friends.
Get ready to have sex with your car.
Yeah.
Right?
If you're driving.
Okay, here we go. If you still have a hymen, it doesn't have to be uncomfortable the first time you... Okay.
It's so hot.
Is it... If you, I could do it like a Southern gentleman. If you all still have a hymen.
Oh, I like that, actually.
It doesn't have to be uncomfortable the first time you use your vagina's receiving... use your vagina's receiving abilities. Sort of grosses me out a little bit. Should I just read it? Okay.
Read the...
Okay. Was that offensive? Okay.
No, well, I mean, it's anatomical. It's helpful for... You
know, receiving abilities is just sort of...
Robotic. Receiving abilities. Hey.
Use your vagina's receiving abilities.
I pride myself on my receiving abilities.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. And I guess I pride myself on my delivering abilities.
Because you're the receiver of things.
Yeah.
You're the penetrator.
Totally.
Receive. Our guest, our guest is just awkwardly sitting here.
I know. I'm sorry.
Kevin Eastman. I'm enjoying the awkward silence of him judging us.
If you still have a hymen, it doesn't have to be uncomfortable the first time you use your vagina's receiving abilities. If you wish, you can prepare yourself over time for a positive first penetration experience.
Ooh.
Use your fingers to gently dilate your vaginal opening and hymen while bathing. While bathing, I say. While bathing. Massage your yoni. Is that how you say that? Yoni.
Yoni.
Massage your new age.
I don't know if
artist,
we can. This segment.
New age musician.
This segment is so awkward to me, but hilarious.
Massage your yoni regularly with coconut oil. Insert a finger or fingers to stretch your hymen and get used to the sensation of having something inside. Include this in your solo sex play as you explore your orgasmic pathways. You may want to buy a nice smallish dildo. So you're smallish made the dildo funny. You may want to buy a nice smallish dildo so your solo sex includes the pleasures of penetration. Also, vote for Barack Obama. It says that in there. Why does it say that?
Okay, so even though it's really awkward in person to be having you sit here and read this, when I listen to the podcast and hear that section where you read, it does sound really nice, actually. It's orally pleasing.
Should I... How about this entire podcast? I'll only speak in this voice.
Ooh, no. Just be yourself.
Okay.
So now we get to go into talking to Kevin Eastman, who's our resident artist superstar here at Meltdown Comics right now. He's like super... He's the coolest.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you? No, listening to you read that, it seems like... That shouldn't be any new information to most young ladies, I'm guessing. What do you think, really?
Yeah.
It's just this natural exploration hasn't happened until you just read that and suddenly they realize, oh, that's what I do. Or that,
I think there are a lot of straightforward things that people don't realize with sex because it's so terrifying before you've done it, you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
Like preparing the way.
Yeah.
I mean, like the fact that a lot of people who are about to give vaginal births, like they didn't even... know that you could possibly just do like internal manual massage to help stretch the birthing canal.
Wow.
I mean, that's kind of a logical step, you know, I would think, but it's actually not something that's talked about.
No, I find it fascinating, really, because it doesn't seem like in this day and age that you'd still imagine that to be even reality. It's like my kids are, you know, have a 5-year-old and 11-year-old, and 11-year-old knows just about everything he needs to know, it seems like, at this point already. You know, even the stuff that goes, ooh, you know, just, I don't know. It's just an observation.
Well, I can't,
but he has got a great voice, though.
Oh, thank you. No, I mean, I know what you mean, especially, you know, in L.A., in big cities, it seems like, you know, you're just exposed to sex earlier, or the idea of it, and you would start figuring it out at a young age.
Yeah, there's sex positive and free thinking and good communication communities out there all around, but then there's lots of pockets of places where they don't talk about that kind of stuff. Know your bodies, guys. Know your feelings. So, segueing, Kevin Eastman is the co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that they were named after, you know, Renaissance artists.
Oh, thanks. That was really kind of a funny thing that when, you know, 'cause a lot of people ask, where did the names come from? And is, to me, when we came up with the idea of the turtles, it's an idea that's so absurd. Mm-hmm. When you can't go with traditional, say, Asian names, it's just not funny enough. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Bob, Doug, Steve, you know, American names just aren't funny enough. And so
Bob,
I was always...
Doug and Steve.
It would have been,
you know,
so different.
Be so great.
And so I was a huge art history fan, so I said, well, why don't we go really crazy and go like Leonardo, Michelangelo, something like that. And,
yeah, like totally Donatello. I mean, it just totally... Yeah. I mean, I always loved that. Even from a small kid, I was like,
well, thanks.
That's rad.
We've gotten lots of great letters from kids that have gotten, you know, a star or a plus or a check because they knew Renaissance artists.
They
never, and not telling the teachers, well, I knew it because of the Ninja Turtles. You know?
Huh.
No, so, it's good to sprinkle your stuff with that kind of greatness. And you also, Onan, are the publisher for Heavy Metal Magazine.
Yes. Yeah, I've been publishing, the owner and publisher for, my goodness, almost 21 years now.
Wow.
Yes, crazy.
That's a lot of hot chick slaying things.
Yes, it is.
I actually watched the movie, the original movie, last night just to get a feel for, okay, what is this? Because I'm not a comic geek, but I appreciate people and their passions, you know, especially geek passion, you know, but even though it's not necessarily my, you know, thing. So just watching the movie and getting a feel for it, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, oh, she's really, oh, look at her taking a nap in the back of that taxi and I can see her panties. I'm too old to...
Is this something that happens in the... I didn't see the movie.
Oh, it was just a scene where, like, she's like, oh, those people are trying to kill me, and you're a taxi driver, and oh, no, I'm sleeping. Huh. And in a way where you could see a lot of things that she... Upper skirt.
I gotta see this.
Yeah. That was... It was... The movie was absurd on so many levels and funny on a number of other levels and sort of homogenized on others in that it's kind of... at that time period, it was, I think the animation started somewhere in 1979 and was done through 1980 and then came out in 1981. So that not only were the techniques kind of, you know, kind of bad, and they try to be, you know, really experimental. And I mean, for example, one of my friends, described the movie as some of the best animation in the world and some of the worst animation in the world all at once. So you have these, like the nipples on all the girls have these really, they look like cauliflower. Did you notice that? Like some of the scenes, all the boobs are huge. They're massive.
Right.
Very
head.
Bouncy.
Very bouncy. And, but they're like, the nipples are like, I've never seen nipples like those ever.
Well, there
ever,
was
so.
One character whose areola looked like flower
like
petals.
Flower petals, yeah.
And I was like, well, they're in a mystical land. I'm okay with this. Like, sure. I went with it.
Cool.
I totally went with it. It was
awesome.
Fine. I'm
no,
not complaining.
No, it's funny because I took, I was a graduate of high school in 1980 and 1981. The movie came out and I was very excited. I was a huge fan of the magazine since the first issue, which came out in 1977. Mm-hmm. And so I'd been working on a date with this girl for about 3 months and asked her out and I took her to see Heavy Metal and I grew up in this very small town in Maine, Westbrook, Maine. And she never spoke to me again.
What?
Huh. Seriously, she told all of her friends that I took her to see this. She didn't understand that I didn't know what kind of girl she was because I took her to see this movie that had all kinds of drug use and sex and blah, blah, blah. And what did I think I was going to score that night because I took her to Heavy Metal and she thought it was appalling and
wow,
stupid. And
you must have felt
that's
bad.
Unfair of her.
I did actually felt because I was so into that, you know, I was so into comics and that kind of stuff. I thought it was really cool. And I thought she, you know, I thought she knew, I mean, I was drawing all the time in high school and stuff. So I thought she'd think it was an extension of me. And she just thought I was weirder than she originally thought, probably. Mm-hmm.
Well, sex in cartoons. I mean, that's not something we see a whole lot in America.
True. Especially in 1980, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, I mean, I support that, but I'm just saying, it's not, yeah, I understand where she came from. I took people to the Waking Life as a teenager. Remember Waking Life?
I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
And if they fell asleep, they were out of the game. That was kind of the way that worked.
Yes. Maybe they were just trying to really experience the movie.
Well, there's an angle. There's an angle. You know, it was just a few people, but I was like, really? You're sleeping right now? This is amazing. So, okay, let's just cut to the chase here, Kevin. Let's just cut to the chase. Okay, so you're super duper artistic.
You're really racist. We've heard that. Let's cut the chase.
I was hoping that didn't spread around.
No, okay. Great career. You're doing different podcasts and you're lots of people are talking to you about your career and whatnot. But we're here talking about sex and love and all of that in between. So I noticed that there was something very specific when I was mentioning, oh yeah, Kevin Eastman's doing some stuff here at Meltdown, that people would say about you. And I realized that this is important to some people, that you were married to Julie Strain for several years. And Julie Strain is really hot.
Julie Strain is muy hot. She's great. Not only is she hot, she's an absolutely wonderful person. And here's the true story of how I met Julie Strain.
Oh, okay.
Stories. Because it's very funny. I used to come to LA a lot for work, and I used to go by a comic store called the Golden Apple Comic Store. A friend of mine who passed away, Bill Leibowitz, owned it. Mm-hmm. So I'd always stop by to see Bill. And
I want to know about you first. Are you a geek? Are you super cool? What's your MO at the time?
Well, when I was growing up, I was a very fat kid. Mm-hmm. I was a uber geek. I mean, I hung out with there was three dorks in grade school and junior high and high school, and I was one of them. Mm-hmm. Especially the early part of high school, I was a foot shorter and about 70 pounds heavier. And then I think in my sometime in my junior year, I grew literally like 9 inches taller and lost weight. And suddenly girls said, oh my, who are, you know, they didn't voice change. One of those kind of things, didn't recognize me anymore.
Ooh, transformation.
Transformation. And girls decided I wasn't that bad looking.
Oh, cool.
Tolerable. And when I met Julie, I'd already had some success with the Turtles, and I'd bought Heavy Metal magazine, and it was coming out to LA a lot for work. I lived on the East Coast, and I would come out here for work, and very busy. And so I went by to see Bill, and he was having the signing of a bunch of actresses. I think it was a Scream Queens signing, a calendar or something like that. And I went in, and there's like 9 really gorgeous, beautiful pinup girls. But the one I really thought was awesome was Julie. I had no idea who she was. Not a clue. And I went out and stood in her line, joined her fan club, and got a picture with her. And then promptly, I enjoyed the moment, and I figured I'd never see her again, and that was pretty much it. 2 months later, came to L.A., went by to say hi to Bill, and there was another signing going on, and there she was again. Ooh, doing a signing. And so this time I went up and I said, would you like to go out for coffee or something like that? She said, no, let's go out on a date. You're taking me to dinner. So she basically threw me in her truck.
Really?
So she had this 6'1", and Julie, one of her books that we published was called Julie Strain, 6'1" and Worth the Climb. And I would say, yes, and she is. And it was awesome. She basically, this Amazon woman basically threw me in a truck.
Fantasy, because I've been to I think Adult Con or one of those in downtown LA, where a lot of like born actresses. I mean, it's different, but I see hot women signing, men lined up to take pictures, and they're all like, "Hey, so what are you doing there?" They're all like, "Oh, pick me! Like you're pretty, take me home," that kind of thing. But you saw a beautiful woman doing a signing at a store,
And you literally joined her fan club.
Yeah,
and then wow.
And then did she know who you were, or like
no?
No, and she was just like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that because she basically found out later. I mean, I found out later, like the next day I went by and was talking to Bill, and he goes, you know who that is? And I said, no, she's done a couple movies, right? And she said, well, she was Penthouse Pet of the Year in 1993, and she was this. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue. And I think Julie did the same thing, talked to one of her friends, and they said, well, he created the Ninja Turtles and blah blah blah, and she's like, "You're kidding me!" So there was a like there before we knew. She thought she actually said in an interview once after She thought I was just some broke kid from the valley. She thought I was kind of cute.
Huh.
So I had my leather, my leather jacket on and my, you know, whatever. She thought I was kind of cute, some broke kid from the valley.
That's awesome.
You know what's funny is, like, I totally thought that Chris Hardwick was just some broke comic in L.A. And we were just chatting. And, like, I was just being really friendly. And that's how he was like, "Do you have a blog?" And then that's how it all happened with the whole Sex Nerd Sandra. Well, I was already calling myself Sex Nerd Sandra, but that's how my connection happened. It's just treating somebody like a human being.
You know,
no matter
it's funny,
who they are.
It's funny because the first time I met him, he just came in and we were just chatting about this, that, and he left. And then Gaston had said once, he said, "Hey, have you ever met Chris?" And I said, "I don't think so." And then Chris came in and said, "Oh, we just chatting the other day." And I didn't know it was – he's just a normal, decent, cool guy.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. But it's nice to have those moments where before all the politics or sort of projections of, yes, of success and whatnot come into play where you can just – be people. I think it's really nice.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Wait, so like that's inspiring to me, even as a female. I mean, because it feels like, oh, they're so much cooler or better than I am. But just to have the balls to just get up there, or the snatch parts, you know, or the ovaries, whatever, to just get up there and be like, "Hey, you're cool. You want to go out?" And that's sometimes it is really just about making the move, you know.
Yep. No, and I, she, you know, having gotten to know her obviously since then was that's just the way she is. She's very upfront about everything. It's just sort of like, you know, what I want, I just take it.
Cool.
So yeah, that was interesting to me and new to me.
And she wanted you.
Mm.
All right. Did you go out to Chinese food, Thai food?
No. Where did we go? I went to Jerry's Deli that night.
Oh, huh. Yeah. Cool.
Yep, Jerry's Deli in Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
One of her favorite places.
Awesome.
The beet borscht.
Oh, you remember. That's really cute. So you'd had some success, I guess, in terms of, okay, you were started out with a chubby kid,
mm-hmm,
right? And then you transformed and then, you know, some success happened. Did you fight with insecurities when it came to like dating women and whatnot? Or like, how did that feel kind of going out there?
Terrible. Actually, and still, you know, painfully shy. It's just sort of, it's a very difficult thing to talk to women, I think, in general. And then, you know, you get nervous and then you know, all that confidence goes out the window and, you know, you get even more self-confidence and you're sort of like just going to go away. But it's hard. It sort of takes a lot of courage to work yourself up to it and do it and ask a girl out. And a lot of times, like, I'd end up I'd see somebody and I'd like fall in love with them before I actually even talked to them. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, by the time I actually got to ask the person out, I was already so in love with that person, mm-hmm, you know, because I was sort of leering at her from across the room for 6 months.
I have that experience. Absolutely. That's what high school's like.
Yeah. It was like, you know, I remember Julie Gagnon was another Julie. It was like, man, she sat in front of me in history class for 2 years and I was, mm-hmm, just so in love with her. And mm-hmm, I just never asked her out. It was like, it was after high school, I think I finally asked her out.
What'd she say?
She said yes. We went out and she actually, funny story is that she was, she went to church every Sunday and I grew up going to church. And I was working, I grew up in Maine, so we cook lobsters all summer. And, you know, you work 94 days a summer to survive the winters. And I was working so much one summer, and she said, "Well, let's go to a movie." And I said, "What is it called?" And she said, "Well, it's called Raiders of the Lost Ark." And I was thinking it was like I thought it was like a religious movie. I mean, I was working so many hours. And I was thinking, "Oh, going to this movie to see this movie about these guys going to find the Ark, Moses." You know. Anyway, but I never went anywhere. It just didn't. We didn't hit it off. It was weird.
But you did go to the movie, right?
Yeah, I went to the movie, and
you were blown away.
The movie was awesome.
Yeah, okay.
But the date wasn't that awesome. So
no. Yeah. I'll remember that name. I'll never date her. Ever. Julie Gagner. Yeah. She's off the list. The list of all the women that I have.
Great last name, though, I have to say.
Yes.
Gagner. Yeah, that's got to be awkward in grade school, maybe, possibly.
I think high school it would get.
Yeah.
Well, she's Cloutier now, so it's Julie Cloutier. I don't know which is better, Julie Gagner or Julie.
Facebooker, yeah. Everybody. Yeah. Facebooker.
Yeah. Cloutier, if that were her last name in middle school, that would have been.
Well, it's like, I grew up, I grew up in Maine, so like Tim Cloutier, who's her husband, dated my sister. And now they're married.
That's son of a bitch.
That's son of a bitch. No, actually, I saw her at the 30th, my 30th high school reunion, and it was neat. She looked great.
So my question is, Painfully shy.
Got to
find the courage. Mm-hmm. How do you find the courage? I was looking up. I have a question from a sweet gentleman who's telling me about how he freaks out when he can talk to women. He has female friends, but when it comes to someone that he likes and just going up and saying, "I like you, you want to go out," he just can't do it. He just seizes up, and I think he's 24. And not a virgin because of like one very interesting friendship, but it was a very long letter, but he was just like, how do I increase my self-confidence when it comes to talking to women? And I don't know, I'm just curious about your take on that.
Man, I think it's so tough. I'm trying to think of most of the girls I dated, I get to be friends with them first, and that was kind of the thing. We get to be almost like buddies, so to speak, mm-hmm. and then it kind of evolved from there, whether it was a general mutual like, and then maybe she was waiting for me to work up the courage to ask her out, but I was get to be friends first. But I think it's anytime I've ever gone up and just asked someone cold, like I've just never had the gift of gab, you know, going to a bar, doing that kind of thing. It's a clusterfuck of epic proportions. This could never work. So it's sort of, you know, be friends first and then take it from there. It's sort of like it's finding mutual interests and mutual likes and things, and that just kind of let it evolve naturally, I guess.
Okay.
So,
and yet you just went up to Julie Strain and was like, girl, looking good.
Yeah, did you feel anxiety in that situation or...
Well, it was so fantastic. It was such a that's probably why, you know, I joined a fan club is, you know, it was so fantastic and it was so unreal. It was like one of those things that was I had no shot in a million years kind of thing. It was like, you know, so I was sort of like, well, I'm going to go up and I just want a picture, and she's just so, I mean, she was, you know, so beautiful. That was courage enough. I didn't want to let that moment go by. And so I did. I went up and you know, mumbled a few things and smiled and took a picture and joined a fan club. And that was pretty much the entire moment. It was sort of, you know, I was probably blushing the whole time and that kind of stuff. And just for whatever reason that night, I just didn't want to let that moment get away.
You were moved.
I was moved.
This is really nice to hear, actually, because what you said about, I mean, you joined her fan club. You said, become friends, let it go organically from there. That's like the opposite of the advice that people give you. You know what I mean?
Charge
like
ahead.
The term, the friend zone. Don't get in the friend zone, you know, because then the relationship is off the table after that.
You know what? To me, the friend zone is not it's like it's great to be friends, but it's when you stop where you close up the sexual part of you where that isn't even part of who you are as you're expressing yourself. Like, if you express yourself as a completely asexual being in the friend zone, that's when you stay in the friend zone. Like,
I suppose that's true. But I mean, in my experience, yes, becoming friends with girls is like generally, then we're not going to sleep together. Like, we're just not going to. And maybe it's because I build a relationship with them as a confidant instead of someone, like, they don't see me sexually because I never put that out there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know if I want to put myself out there sexually with friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, if you're interested.
Right.
You want to.
Okay.
Or you're just like, once you're in the friend zone, you're like, oh, good, I'm in the friend zone. We don't want to mess this up now. We being you and yourself, I don't know why.
I guess what I mean is if I'm building a friendship with someone, it would make me feel uncomfortable if there was a sexual tension there.
Oh. Okay.
Too. Yeah. Is that strange?
Sexual tension is healthy, I think.
Okay.
You know.
I actually don't really know what we're talking about.
What do you think, Kevin?
Well, it's funny because there's no to me, at least in my experience and my opinion, there's no surefire way. It's like any relationship I've ever had each one has happened for different reasons and different under different circumstances, and it's all evolved sort of organically, not like, you know, I can't think of one that I sort of specifically manipulated, like, oh, I really, really want, you know what I mean? It was just sort of like, had to be friends and then, you know, slept together and it didn't work out and we're still friends, or friends slept together and it didn't work out, and, you know, we're not friends anymore. But, you know, I don't know. It's not like I don't feel like there's a guidebook.
Of course.
Like, you know, I know.
I mean, there are guidebooks, but they're hit and miss.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, the person I'm with now, I've been Pam, I've been with her for 8 years, and she was a dental assistant and introduced to me by my sister. Said, hey, I have a friend that's just looking for, you know, a nice person to have dinner with occasionally. Mm-hmm. And I was traveling a lot, and I was in Massachusetts, and we went out on one date and, you know, been together 8 years without missing a beat.
That's great.
It's the first time ever I ever felt that. You know, you mm-hmm. hear like everybody's like, oh, when I told you about my experience with Julie, and Julie and I have had and still have a wonderful relationship. We're better friends than we were being married. But we had a great moment and a real spark and a bond, especially early on. But still with Pam, I've never felt that before. You know, the myth of, you know, soulmates and all this stuff, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, we just peas and carrots, man. It was like, wow, holy shit.
Just felt it.
That's great.
Yeah. Never been apart since. It's crazy. Still get along, never fight. It's just, it's really bizarre. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Huh. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes that happened with my best friend. It was I've only had love at first sight once, and it was with my best friend. Mm. Like, we fell in love friendship wise immediately the minute we saw each other in school. It was just like, we just knew.
It's funny because it's immediate, and it's a bond. Like, you know, you're still friends now.
I mean, oh yeah,
yeah. It's an immediate like, wow, you know, and freaky.
Yeah,
really cool though.
It is cool. Mm. Have you ever fallen in love for sight?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, I don't know.
Fallen in lust.
Right. Well, that, absolutely. Uh-huh. I've certainly seen someone have been like, oh, God, you know, I want things, you know?
Yeah.
I think maybe my high school girlfriend, the girl that I dated through, like the first time I saw her, I was like, whoa, you're awesome. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the case with her and me as well, but we dated for like 3 years, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. lost our virginities to one another.
It's sex with carrots.
Yes, yes. She was a potato, mm-hmm. and I loved her. Huge potato.
All right, sex with vegetables was a inside joke with one of my partners, because I think...
Because he was in a coma.
That's so tragic. And taking a left turn.
You said it.
Comics. Okay, look at this guy over here. No, it was one of my first sex toys was, you know, a carrot. You know, it was helpful. It was helpful in my life
baby
at
carrot?
The time. Come on.
Whoa, I don't know. Maybe you work your way up. Baby carrot, two baby carrots, regular carrot.
Right? No, that we were very young.
Oh, teens.
Teens.
Is there anything else?
Yeah, no, that's like when you were reading earlier, and I felt like, you know, the first time you masturbate, the first time you figure out how all that stuff works, obviously you're alone and you're sort of exploring yourself and that kind of thing. It just seems like, you know, like the book like you're reading from, it's hard to imagine that person's never touched themselves before, mm-hmm. experienced or figured out some of those things before they read that in the book that you read to them.
Yeah, or right. anything beside fingers, yeah.
Yeah.
Carrots, excellent dilator. I would recommend organic and peeling it first, though. You know,
right? Definitely peel. There's
definitely
all that
washing it.
For, yeah, and pretty much it. Wash whatever you're gonna put
right.
in
just
your,
about everything.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, including a penis. Wash the penis.
Wash the penis yeah. in holy water before
and
you.
Plenty of toilet paper.
Always in holy water.
Yeah, yeah. Plenty of toilet paper. These are all
pages from
things.
The Bible. What? You said holy water? Why is it weirder that I...
Well, washing something in pages from the Bible.
Do you have a favorite toilet paper, by the way? Is like, because Julie had very specific. She had a very specific kind of toilet paper.
I don't have any specific. No. Mm. No, I mean, if I'm feeling really luxurious, I'll get something super cushy. But I just... sometimes I'm just like, I don't care at all.
As long as it's something.
Yeah.
I mean, use if it's Bible pages. For sure.
Oh, God. I had a friend throw a Bible off when we were in a hotel room and we were teenagers. And she threw the Gideon's Bible out the window, like 8 stories down. And I wasn't religious at the time, but I thought it was so disrespectful. I went down and I got the Bible. And now I have a Bible in my library that has grass stains all throughout the pages. I love it.
It is disrespectful.
I was like, that's just not right. I got it. I don't know. It's just, you know, I don't wipe my ass with it is what I'm saying. But
I mean, me neither. I was joking. It was off color, sure. Mm-hmm.
I do hump it from time to time, though. Just bring it back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I do that with every holy book.
Right.
It's not just Christianity, so don't take it personally.
Right. Wow, interesting. Mm-hmm. That'd be an interesting fetish.
That would be a really holy scriptures. Yes.
Google it. I'm sure there's something related to
it. It has to be.
I can only have sex with Herman Hesse books. That's
Starf
my thing.
Starf is pretty flimsy. I don't know if there's a hardcover on that. I'd need a hardcover.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, for me, the hardcover would be a little bit.
Oh, right. For you, you could kind of like.
I could wrap it around my.
Right.
Yeah. Really, we wanted to bring you here to talk about how to fuck books.
Bibles, especially.
Yeah. Bibles are always hardcover. Difficult for a man to have sex with.
Not always, but yeah. Well, we'll get like the teen edition, I think, is soft cover. You can carry
Well, that's against the law.
in many states, yes.
Yeah.
No, you have to go here at Meltdown. At Meltdown Comics, one of the things that I did as part of the exhibits here was do a recreation of my home studio. It's actually my home studio. I moved it here, and we're doing this auction. Yeah. But I published a book, a Bible book, drawn by Simon Bisley. It's called Simon Bisley's. It's a work in progress. It's about 100 pages. But the poster, promotional poster, which was in my studio, which is now here, pages from the Bible. But I also found biblical toys once, and I have not only a white Jesus, but also a black Jesus. And both of them are hanging on the wall. So
wait, really? Biblical sex toys?
Not sex toys, okay. But you could probably use them as sex toys. But it was just fun. It's all this Bible talk and all about sex made me think of Jesus and then saving, you know. I felt, because I went to church when I was younger, and I think it was important to have that background.
Sure.
not a counterbalance, but it's good to have that kind of information and have a little bit of fear of God, especially when you're younger. You know, besides your mother, could kick your ass. You know, God also. Jesus.
Right. If your mom's not around, Jesus is there to back her up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially when you're masturbating, you know, 3 or 4 times a day.
It's good to feel like someone's watching you.
Absolutely.
But anyway.
Wait, I have a question about it's masturbation triggered it, but okay, so. I get it.
Are you masturbating?
I was thinking like where could masturbating this go? Now, and I was trying to think of where I was going with that. I was going somewhere that was like between Jesus and masturbation and me printing the Bible. I don't know. It just
well, we were talking about respect of religion. I think is where that came from.
I mean, that made me think of R. Crumb's illustrating the Genesis. I think
it's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. So I'm like, oh, somebody else is illustrating. It was interesting.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. I want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you put the sex bits in as well.
Yeah, you keep them in there.
Yeah.
It's all in there. That's life,
there's
guys.
There's sex in the Bible?
Yeah.
There is.
There's nice sex in the Bible. There's all kinds of stuff.
What page?
Heavy metal. Okay, it was around for a while. You liked it. You know, then you went to see the movie and stuff. Did you admire the magazine as a artistic thing? Like, oh, these are cool stories and it's awesome. Or did you also kind of wink off to it? Like, was that like something where it's like, was hot?
Well, definitely both, but it was initially what was fascinating to me when I found Heavy Metal magazine was around the time that it was 1977 when the first issue came out, and I was sophomore going into junior year of high school, and comics were kind of getting to be juvenile, even though that's what I wanted since I was, you know, a little kid. I wanted to draw comic books. I was writing my stuff all the time, drawing comic books all the time, reading comic books all the time. But then you start noticing girls and you oh, you still read comic books. But I loved the medium and I loved the art form and I kept doing it anyway. But then it was like, you know, guys in skin tight suits, you know, Spider-Man, Superman, same old. Well, along comes Heavy Metal. Mm-hmm. And Heavy Metal, even back in those days, purchased the rights to European comics and translated them and published them in English here. And the Europeans, you know, when we had McCarthyism and the Comics Code and, you know, keeping comic books for kids, the Europeans kept exploring and evolving comics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their comic book content is for mature audiences.
So the art form evolved completely differently on that
completely
continent
different,
versus
yes.
here. Oh.
Yeah. So it's like you would have just about every kind of mature theme that we would see in movies done in comic books. Just, you know, some of the most popular things there were historical, you know, Columbus and this and that, and Westerns. They love Westerns, but they would do a lot of science fiction and stuff. All stuff that was never published here. And here it was like, you know, this soap opera sort of, you know, Peter Parker, Aunt May, Mary Jane, blah, 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 you know, Archie comics, that kind of stuff. So when I found Heavy Metal, it just blew my mind. It's like, oh, my God, you can actually, anything you can imagine, you can do in comic book form. That's what the medium's for, and that's the kind of storytelling that is available for cartoonists. And Heavy Metal exposed me to underground cartoonists like Robert Crumb and Von Bode and Richard Corbin and that. So I then, in my pursuit of other like content led me to underground comics, you know, drug culture, like mm-hmm. Robert Crumb's Fritz the Cat, which was made into an animated. You ever see Fritz the Cat?
I've never seen it. No,
oh, it's I a, want to right now.
It's Ralph Bakshi directed this animated movie, X-rated animated movie based on a Robert Crumb short story called Fritz the Cat. And so heavy metal led me to underground comics, drug culture, you know, the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, you know, Slow Death, Death Rattle, publishers like Last Gas and Kitchen Sink. And so when it came time for me to submit some of the first stories that I wanted to draw as comic books, I didn't send them to Marvel or DC. I sent them to all these underground publishers. And so I also, around this time that, I'd say 83, 84, when around we started working on the Turtles, I was exposed to other underground publishers like Dave Sim, who did Cerebus, and he was a very successful self-publisher, which mm-hmm. inspired me to self-publish the Turtles, which, by self-publishing the Turtles, I owned and controlled all the rights to the Turtles. Peter Laird and I, thus we benefited from the success of the Turtles, which allowed me to make enough money to buy Heavy Metal. So I say, Heavy Metal helped me create the Turtles so I could buy Heavy Metal.
Awesome.
That's so cool.
How's that for full circle?
Yeah.
It is true, and I very much feel that's true. I mean, I found Heavy Metal, you know, at a head shop and when I was in high school, and it changed my life. And, you know, 10 years later, 11 years later, I bought Heavy Metal magazine. I've been publishing it ever since.
It's interesting to me just that instead of trying to fit into the mold that was the comic world at that time, you went and followed what you were drawn to, and somehow that led you around to totally. The Turtles and background to Heavy Metal. That's cool. Follow your dreams, guys. Don't settle.
Totally do.
Right? Be you.
But Heavy Metal is what I did love about it, too, is that the adult nature of the content was, you know, it was, you know, very sexual, overly sexual, you know, because even, you know, when you're younger reading Peter Parker, Spider-Man, you know, Mary Jane had awesome tits, you know, so did Betty and Veronica.
Right.
Right. It was all the titillation, but you didn't actually get to see any payoff.
Exactly.
Right. Like they cut out the sexuality from life. Yep. And then in Heavy Metal, it's
Here comes Heavy Metal. And it's all there, right? And, you know, right in your face.
It's all intact.
Yeah. It's all intact, literally. So.
Generally, comic books are still lacking in the more adult side of things in America, right? Like I'm not a comic book nerd. I don't read many comics, but you said like comics in Europe evolved to be more sexual and adult. And I look around Meltdown and I still don't really see that much.
Or it's in the X-rated, like there is a sex section where it's just like, these are
specifically for that.
Yeah.
Right.
This is, you know, a bunch of people chained to things and looking hot and stuff.
I guess what I'm asking is it common for there to be sex in comic books in America now?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, for the longest time, they had the Comics Code Authority, and basically it told parents that, you know, they'd have this little symbol that was on the cover of every, you know, comic, especially
like movies.
Yeah, exactly. It was like in the 70s into the early 80s when things started changing. When you started seeing this, you know, I wasn't the only one that was discovering underground comics and trying to merge the world of European comics and a lot of Japanese comics, which are very adult, you know, as the world shrunk, I guess, in exposure, more imported books, more, you know, Heavy Metal exposed a lot of other artists to that same kind of material. You started seeing this gap of Comics Code, you know, very, you know, typical Archie comics and underground comics, that gap suddenly start to close into where today you have kind of a nice hybrid of lots of different kinds of comics, even though most of the mainstream comic companies, Marvel and DC, which are big corporations, they have to stay safe because they're big corporations and they can't push it fully sexually. But if you look at any of the covers and you look at the content, everybody's very scantily clad. Mm-hmm. All the costumes are very revealing, very detailed. They get away as much as they can, much like in movies. They push the limits as hard as they can.
Did you see that? It was hilarious, like the Avengers, like the poster for the Avengers, mm-hmm. and how it's like a bunch of guys. I mean, I don't know all the characters, but all the characters are face forward, and then the one female character is just angled so that you can see her back and her front. Mm-hmm. And so then somebody drew a parody of that where they're like, what if all of the male characters were trying twisted in that way? And so like there's one where she's just facing forward with her gun, just like ready to fight, and then all the other male characters are just like, that's, you know, bootylicious, just like. And I loved
it
so
great.
Much. I'm really into it.
You should walk, I mean, you walk on some of the new release aisles, like DC did this new DC 52, and like every single one of the covers has some very scantily clad female with very large breasts on the cover.
It is
interesting, like, something I've always noticed about what women wear in comics, a lot of female superheroes wear impossible clothing, like where they're like, you can see their breasts in their entirety, but they're just sort of like, there's like yellow and blue stripes on their clothing.
Right.
Like, you can't make a piece of clothing like that goes right up to under the boob, and then the entire boob is in the clothes. It's, I guess, so yeah. It's, yeah, look, I need to go jerk off. that's what I'm saying.
For me, it's frustrating. Oh, I mean, I have seen more characters that are a bit more, like I'd like to see more characters, like female characters that are, like, you know, better, like, armored so that they won't get hurt, you know, and then kick some ass. And, you know, I want to see a little more loincloths. I mean, come on, guys. Bear it all.
But it's
for
what
me.
We're into.
Yeah.
Well, I think what's cool that there's such a nice range. I mean, you, like you said, like a store like this particular store, like a lot of really good comic stores will have run the whole gamut from mm-hmm. Spinner racks with still carrying Archie comics to, you know, adults only sections and everything else in between. So you can sort of for, you know, everybody.
That's true. Mm, as long as you're offering a full spectrum for different needs. Hmm. We don't have much time, but I have a question I really want to ask you.
Please.
Okay. And I know when we first met a few days ago, I'd let you know that there'd be a section where I was like, hey, if you want to, you can share a tip about what you've learned. Do you remember this?
Yep.
And I was thinking, when it comes to, like, you have been married and you're with Pam for 8 years now. What are some you say, like, for instance, you mentioned that Julie and you have a great friendship now, better than, you know, the relationship you had in the past. Like, what have you learned in terms of relationship communication and what helps people thrive in those sorts of relationships?
Well, I mean, speaking for me personally, in the relationship that Pam and I have is first and foremost is respect. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, it's very important to me to do even silly little things like open the car door. I bring, you know, bring flowers. I mean, just typical, mm-hmm. I'm kind of old school gentleman kind of stuff. And she likes that. And it's sort of,
you're a good man.
Well, I don't think it gets old. I mean, honestly, and I feel like, you know, never presume anything out, you know, as my buddy jokes, he says, well, you can always ask for forgiveness later, but go ahead and try it. And I'm like, no, I think it's sort of like, I feel like, it's respect and we have a good, relationship that way, where we both want to work together and we both want to please each other. So I think mm-hmm. that's probably the most important, is like, you know, we're not always at our best all the time, especially in a long-term relationship. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have bad days, she has bad days, but, you know, just got to know when to give a little bit, when to, you know, take a little bit. But just keep it balanced, keep it even, keep the respect mm-hmm. First and foremost in bed, not a bed. That's mm-hmm. very important, you know?
I like that. I like, and you said that about, you know, opening the car door and still just treating each other with respect. There is a certain thing, like, let's say when you first buy your car and you're all treating it nice and making sure to park it, you know, so that you don't bang anything and whatnot. And then, like, 5 years in, you're like, yeah, whatever. You know, I've had you for a while. And you kind of treat people like that sometimes.
When sure.
You just take them for granted a little bit and you're just like,
get used to them.
Yeah. Yep. And it's nice to still treat them nicely.
That's important because it, yeah. That's a tip I would give is keep the respect there first. Don't let it go away, because you can, like, you know, sometimes you've had lifelong friends, and sometimes you say, well, I can be a little bit more of an asshole to them because they're my friends. They expect that from me. And it's like, mm-hmm. nah, you know what? Yes, you can, but still, you know, it's you should work extra hard to keep those friends because mm-hmm. it's important.
You can be an asshole to your friends when they've known you.
Yeah.
You
know,
you can. Yeah.
Yeah, you they say, know. Oh, they expect it. And think, but no, you know, it's still...
Well, it's like when I was a kid, I used to always wonder, like, my dad was a teacher. Mm-hmm. He used to always wonder why he had no problem screaming at me, mm-hmm. But he would never do that to his students. It's sort of like you reach a comfort zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is that, yeah.
And you think, like, yeah, well, this person knows me, so it's okay for them to see the darker side of me, mm-hmm. you know, but it's probably better to show, I mean, yeah, just be good to people no matter how long. You've known them and how much they can tolerate your bullshit, right?
Yeah. Golden rule, guys. Golden rule. No, it's that saying, that really odd saying, you only hurt the ones you love. Like, that's screwed up. Why are you hurting the ones you love? Like,
yeah, I've always thought that.
Be cool.
Yeah, that's just 100% right. It's like, those are the ones you want to protect the most. It's mm-hmm. like, those are the, you know, like your friend that you've been friends with from the moment you saw each other. It's like, you want to treasure that and save it and make mm-hmm. it special and keep it forever and ever and ever. It's like, why would you be mean to it or unkind or
you know, right.
be an asshole. Just keep it, protect yeah. it, save it, enjoy it. It's special.
Yeah. And like, it's also hard to communicate sometimes when someone does go over a boundary and you've known each other for a while mm-hmm. and they do something and you just feel kind of burned by that. And it's hard to be like, hey, man, you kind of hurt me there. You know, because it's like, whoa, because that's, we're just friends. Like, you don't have to have feelings. Like, you know, like, we're cool.
There's
like,
certainly a lot of that, yeah.
You know? But there's definitely times, you know, love each other. They yep. love each other.
Love each
no,
other.
No, really, right now, love, no. I'm not going to. It'd be so weird if I suddenly turned into a creepy host person.
Love each other.
You know, I'm like, no, really, yeah. touch your breasts, you know. You know.
No, hurry, touching it. Kevin, touching
squeeze
nipples.
Them. Squeeze them. Katie, touch him. Touch him.
Katie enjoyed that a lot.
I don't know what I'm doing. I don't. I just
Katie,
like talking about
Dutch
sex
him.
Stuff.
Do it.
No, I'm really actually very pleased that you were able to come up and talk for a little bit and share a little bit of what you've learned.
Well, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for asking me up. It's been awesome.
Yeah, so, I was very shy when I came up to you.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice. Really, I didn't. I thought you were, you know, because I'm usually, like I said, I'm still even now. Uh-huh. I'm the shy one. Mm-hmm. It's like you came up and started chatting, and it was really nice.
I know. It's got to be really professional. Like, hey, I'm Sandra. I do a sex podcast. Want to join? Yeah. No.
That was cute. I appreciated it really much, and that's why I'm here. That's, mm-hmm. That was nice.
Thank you. Yeah. You're very wise. Good luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thanks. Yeah, good to meet you, man.
Nice meeting
thanks
you.
Thanks for coming
thank
on.
You. Thanks. All right, naughty monkeys. Have a good one.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.